This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 297, Big in Hungary. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday afternoon in now finally no longer raining North Carolina with my friend and co-host Michael Martin. Michael, how the hell are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Michael. Hopefully you are going to be enjoying the rest of your day and what looks to be like a lovely weekend. But
no, before we no, get I don't to want that, to.
But before we
need
get to
explain
that,
why we are big in Hungary. One of the funny things for people who don't, you know, do their own podcasts, that you get is you get a lot of emails from people trying to either sell you stuff or sell your stuff, and you never know, are these real or are they spam? So this week, we got a really nice letter from a gentleman explaining that we are shooting up the charts in Hungary as a tech podcast, and would we like to reach out to them to help grow our audience in Hungary?
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
And what do you think? Shall we?
Well, we're going to count on our Hungarian listeners right here to bump our numbers even more.
So, yes, you know, they can tell their friends, and they can tell their friends, and they can tell two friends, and so on and so on and so forth.
So we'll be even bigger in Hungary,
that's right.
Basically.
That's right.
What our story is.
We'll be huge in Hungary.
Well, if we come maybe a little bit more close to home here, our first story of this episode, this week, is right from our backyard in Raleigh, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. A friend of mine sent me this, indicating that he was about to be doing a virtual performance as a singer at the launch of a new virtual space over at the North Carolina State University. And I thought this was really cool because what they've done, and it was the event actually happened on November 12th, and they are using a completely browser-based virtual world that allows you to spin up your own virtual rooms, and it's based off of the Brickyard, which is a famous location on campus at NC State University. You can use it for virtual meetings, and if you have VR gear, you can meet each other in VR. You and I played with it right before recording today, and I was a panda bear.
Yep, and I chose a fox as an avatar for a little while, and I'm seeing people wandering around the space right now. Cool. Or maybe they are non-player characters, just kind of
could be NPCs. Could be.
So it's kind of fun and easy, right? You just drop yourself straight in, and you can create things in the environment, and you can talk to other people that are there too. So. Yep.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the early virtual world work that we did. I mean, the idea of co-creation is not lost on it. They do allow you to generate new objects. I didn't see actual creating new objects from scratch. It was like, you know, I threw a Jeep out on the quad, so to speak, which was, again, kind of cool. But you couldn't really, at least in the 5-10 minutes that we played with, I could not see how you would build up objects from primitives, right?
Not easily. What they did is they connected into Google Poly and Sketchfab. So I guess in theory you could have uploaded something there and then brought it in world, if that was the way you were going to proceed. Yeah. So That's pretty cool. It's easy to use for sure, and it's easy to use via a browser too. So you don't need to be fully outfitted with all the VR kit in order to jump straight into this virtual world. And you just kind of move around SWD wise, and do what you do, right?
Yeah, pretty cool. So thank you for sending us our way. Like I said, it was kind of neat to see
a quick, down, dirty, easy way of getting started. And, you know, most people are not content creators anyway. So if you need a virtual space where you can meet up with people, I think it's a great start.
Yeah. Love it. And congratulations to all the musicians that kicked this off here on the 12th, too. There's a whole list of them in the show notes. You'll see it. And also in World, if you happen to drop in.
Cool.
All right, so let's switch from the world of virtual reality to reality, physical reality. And there was an intriguing article I came across in Ars Technica, and boy, we could spend probably a good half an hour just on this article. It's pretty long, but it's talking about cars. You know, we like talking about cars here, and we talked recently about cars that are using the structure of the car itself to be a speaker. This particular article is talking about using the structure in the body of the car to be a battery. So that was the neat thing for me, right? So you don't need to have this enormous battery pack, you know, in the center of the car that may have challenges around weight distribution, all those kind of things, but rather you're using the frame of the entire car itself to store energy to propel said vehicle.
Yeah, I was actually pretty intrigued by this because I always thought that the weight distribution of the battery packs in cars today, right, which is kind of centered in the vehicle and low in the vehicle, right, made a lot of sense because it would make the vehicle a little bit more stable and provide a good center of gravity for turning and corners and things of that nature. By actually moving it into the body frame, moving the batteries into the body frame, it seems to lift the center of gravity of the battery packs to me, and provide a ring around the passenger compartment of batteries, which again seems, from my non-physics expert brain, to cause some different weight distribution than centered and concentrated on the floor. So it'll be interesting to see what that design could mean in practice, and what other trade-offs would have to occur in the design of the vehicle because of the shift of the batteries.
Yeah, I get that. And part of the thing that I immediately leapt to was in the case of structural damage to the vehicle, right? So if you're in the car and you have an accident, you know, how do you avoid the circumstance of the battery, which is now the car itself, from causing even worse damage from a minor fender bender, right? You don't want to electrify the participants or the occupants of the car, and you don't want to create a situation where you're arcing now to another car that you just hit.
Yeah, that could be electrifying.
the other thing that was kind of cool here, and again, like I said, we could spend easily a half hour on this subject alone, was the notion of not just applying this concept and technology to automobiles, but to do it for airplanes so that you could electrify flight. So that, without even going into grand detail around it, to me is like, yes, I can see where that's going to be absolutely crucial, because the wings and the wingspan of so many planes, which is where the fuel tanks are, could be where you could store a lot of energy that would allow an electric plane to fly over very long distances.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do remember an article, and I'll try to see if I can find it, an article recently of a fully electric plane, I want to say circumnavigating the globe.
Yeah, now, it may be
super high altitude,
yeah,
solar-based electric plane, yeah. But that changing the material of the wings to also be the batteries and the solar panels for, because you wouldn't want, not yet at least, a fully solar-driven commercial vehicle, commercial plane for, you know, 300 passengers. But I could imagine taking the tops of the wing surface and making those all solar panels in order to address battery consumption of stuff like the in-flight entertainment system, all of the people who are powering up their laptops, right? And sure. providing that as a means of electricity for the the passengers on the vehicle.
Yeah, and that would be pretty darn cool, too, to do that for the passengers and also to extend the range. I could see where that would be super deluxe cool as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm going back and I've been rereading some novels from my high school and college days, Piers Anthony's Incarnations of Immortality series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, with death and everything, right?
Yes, and I accidentally grabbed book 5 instead of book 3. So I
could see how that would happen.
I got 70 pages in, and I'm like, wait a minute, this can't... Oh, okay, I've got to stop and go back. But this is Being a Green Mother, which is about the aspect of nature. And she starts off and she gets a carpet from her grandfather, which is a magic carpet that can fly in. And she gets told, you know, for travels, you may want to use the mechanical devices for traveling overseas because, you know, the carpet is not a commercial one and it's going to fly too low to the ground and you could have problems over large expanses of water. And it got me thinking to your point on extending the range, right, of using the solar power aspect in order to improve flight there. So very cool. I do find this interesting, and your point on collision issues and arcing with that is something that I'm sure they have to take into consideration. I've worked with many different auto OEMs in my day job, and safety systems are critical. I mean, they are job one when it comes to the designs of new vehicles.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, now, speaking of new vehicles.
New vehicles. Yeah, well, Michael, you and I are both Apple fans, right?
I am an Apple user, yes.
but it's fair to say you're a fan, right?
I don't know if I'm a fan. I like the fanless kind.
Oh, do you now? So then the new Apple Air just announced this week would be the Mac for you, wouldn't it?
Absolutely not. This is really cool, and watching the keynote the other night of the announcement of the new M1 chip-based Macs was pretty impressive. Now, and there was a lot of speculation going into it, and even right after the event on, you know, are they creating different chips for the different models? And it appears that at least in this first iteration of new laptops and a desktop, the Mac Mini, it's the same chip. The only difference is some binning, right? So does the chip have 7 good processors on it or 8? And if it has 8, it's binned to one model. And if it has 7, it's binned to another model. But the biggest difference is not things that you consider normally in a laptop or a computer, things like clock speed, right? Mm-hmm. It's airflow. So these chips are designed and made in the same, at least architectural concepts of what's in your iPhone or your iPad or even your watch, right? And so they're designed for low power consumption, and that also means low heat generation.
Right.
So to get the speeds that you want in a pro-level Mac laptop, they've kept the fan for those and for the desktop unit that's constantly plugged in. But the new MacBook Air has no fan. And so it's going to be just quiet as can be. And they supposedly, because I don't know anyone who has one yet, are not generating the types of heat that you're used to. If you ever used a Mac Air, have you had a MacBook Air ever?
Never did. I was always on the pro side of things.
Yeah, I had one. Work gave me one some years back. And I mean, it was a good little device. It's just that when you started doing anything serious with it, the fans would kick in. The thing would get hot as could be. As
it starts to hover.
Yes, it would start flying around like a magic carpet, not over the ocean. but the new ones have the promise of being completely quiet and cool, because the way they throttle performance is temperature based. And so the performance clock speed arc is driven off of temperature and battery consumption. Mm-hmm. And so they actually can throttle the MacBook Air differently than the MacBook Pro, because the MacBook Pro has cooling built in and the MacBook Air does not. This is a really interesting way of approaching this problem. And as anybody who uses a laptop for any significant amount of time knows, the biggest problem is that power consumption, draining your battery. And they promised up to 18 hours of battery life on this laptop in browsing mode, and 20 in like listening to audio, which is just insane. Amazing.
Phenomenal.
So I was very impressed. I have been on the pro side for my own devices for a very long time, and it will be very interesting to see how they differentiate to, like, I have the 16, the Pro 16, with four ports, not just two, and is able to drive many, many monitors versus the new MacBook Pro 13-inch, which will only drive one external monitor. So there's multiple trade-offs that are not called out very loudly in the marketing material.
Huh, super interesting. You know what struck me, Michael, and I didn't realize the nuance until you said it, about the temperature being the determining factor of the performance that you get off the same chip.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there might be a life hack around this where you know there are companies out there that sell like cooling pads and stuff like that. So could you heat sink away through the bottom of your MacBook Air and keep it cool enough that you could approach the same kind of performance characteristics that you have on a MacBook Pro?
You know, I am guessing, and purely a guess, that given Apple's design aesthetics and engineering practices, that the throttle on these devices is...
It's probably software.
Software driven.
Yeah.
And they make sure that the performance envelope that the MacBook Air stays in is not driven by the physical temperature of the device. I'm guessing that.
Probably so. But wouldn't it be interesting if it weren't?
Yeah. All you would need is a very, very large hole drilled into the base of the unit.
Well, you know, we've got these freezer packs, like you put on your leg if you need to put an ice pack on it, you know, so, you know.
Why not?
Could something like that, you know, a little cryogenics here, you know?
Anything's possible. Who
knows? All right. Well, talk about possibilities. You know, I've been a HomePod user now for quite a while.
Yes, and I did know that.
Yeah, and Andy loves to remind me of that every once in a while too. So I love my HomePod. I think it's a fantastic device, and one of the things that I love about it so much is that here in pandemic land, we've been able to have a projector outside showing a movie from our Apple TV connected to the projector, and have the HomePod be the audio generation for said device. So, granted, you don't want to do this when it's out in the rain or whatever, but the HomePod delivers pretty darn good audio outside, as does the video that the Apple TV provides through the projector. So it's kind of like a neat pandemic outdoor socially distanced opportunity to watch a movie.
Yes.
So now we've got the HomePod Mini.
So did you order one?
I don't need to order one. I already have a HomePod.
You have one HomePod.
I have one HomePod.
The Mini is small ball. You throw them all around the house. You have 10 of them. You put one in every room. Come on.
So
get with the program here.
The interesting thing about the Mini, there's actually a couple of them. One would be, hey, you want to set that up as a speakerphone, right? So maybe that is something that for your home office, instead of wearing headphones, you could just put the HomePod Mini up next to your computer and it would serve as the microphone and the speakers for you. So that could be kind of cool, right?
Yep.
You might want to throw them around the house too, because then you could start to play with the intercom. Now,
And I know how much you loved the walkie-talkie on the watch.
That's exactly where it's going to go, Michael. It's like, okay, difference between walkie-talkie, iMessage, and intercom is sort of like, any which way allows you to quickly get to people. And I think I've only played with walkie-talkie just a little bit. You know, it's not that I did love it or didn't love it. It's just I didn't do very much with it. And if I needed to talk to somebody, I could always call them, too.
Yeah, I know you and I set each other up on walkie-talkie, but I don't think we used it but once.
Yeah, I think we did once, and that was it.
And it's like, yes, this is walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, no, I have not gotten a HomePod Mini, and one of the things that have kept me away from that, too, is that the HomePod Mini would not provide the additional benefits with the HomePod that I have. So if I were to get another device, then the logical thing to do would be to get a second HomePod, because then that way they've got the full stereo set up. And when they talk to one another and go, oh, you're here, I'm here, I'm here, you're here. Let's let's have some music.
Yeah. Yeah, it keeps intriguing me. And you know, design-wise, it actually looks pretty cool. I kept going back and forth on wanting and not wanting a HomePod, so it's not a loss not getting it. I mean, most of the feature function I would use is stuff that I do anyway on my either watch, which is always with me, or phone or iPad. So I have good stereo speakers for my stereo and for my TV, and I even have remote speakers attached through AirPlay in my office downstairs. So the music part, I have better speakers for music because they're distributed, you know, nicely separated, well-positioned speakers. But I do find it interesting. It does look like this will probably be the stocking stuffer for your Apple fans and your family.
Yeah.
If they have expensive stockings.
Or if they have a fan.
Or they have a fan, yes.
Very, very cool. So let's talk about small things that might be a stocking stuffer if you are part of the Nintendo family. And there's lots to talk about from a Nintendo perspective. But this new thing, the Game & Watch, looks to be just a bit larger than a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not as big as a Game Boy, but it's got a number of the same characteristics where you could just start to play some of the old games that you've loved to play, like Super Mario Brothers, with this very small golden environment with the big old D switch and the AB buttons, and jump around until you don't want to jump around anymore.
Yeah, I saw this, and to me, never actually having had, other than the Wii, a Nintendo device.
Oh, really?
Right? Yep. Because I've never been a console player, right? All my games have been PC-based, other than the Wii. And the Wii was fun, and I enjoyed the Wii. So we're not knocking the Wii, because we want to go Wii all the way home. No. but I find this interesting. It reminded me, as you say, of the little handhelds, right? That Nintendo has been famous for years. I don't see it really as a watch. To me, it's a clock, right? It's too big. Where would you put this watch, right? But it does look kind of cool, and the fact that it does have a couple of lost levels of Super Mario Brothers 2 built in for you to play with is kind of cool. And I think this is a neat little one. Maybe it'll help people who can't get their Switch, right? Give them something to play with while they're still waiting to get Switches.
Oh, gosh, that'd be rough. a less satisfying experience than a Switch, to be sure. And, yes. And not one you can put up on your TV very easily, right?
Well, you probably could throw it up on the TV, but I mean literally throw it at your TV.
So let's round out this week with one other game that I came across while doing the show notes for last week. And as I was doing the show notes, and we've talked about a variety of simulators. We've talked about the Goat Simulator, and we've talked about
Bus Simulator,
Bus Simulator, you know, the airline, what was it called? the one where you're simulating flying across the ocean.
Airplane
mode, right?
Airplane mode, yeah. And, you know, and Little Computer People is a little simulator, right?
Yeah, we did that one last week, too. So this one was just entirely too funny. This is the mowing simulator, and it's by Hydra Games. Its planned release date is sometime in Q4, right? So soon, right? In this year, 2020. So if you feel like you need to get out and mow, and you don't have a yard to mow, it looks like you're going to have opportunities to mow all kinds of different yards, ones that are on top of buildings, you know, that are very small, ones that are expansive, and lots of different mowers that you can upgrade and change and go and do. And I'm like, boy, if there are people that enjoy this, more
come
power
to my house
to them. Maybe it's a simulator, a good simulator to help kids get, you know, engaged in mowing and then get out there and mow some other neighbors' yards and earn some money, and they can upgrade their mowers that way too.
I love that the animated GIF on the Steam site is someone just like going nuts, cutting down all the flowers next to the next to the house. Like,
and the weed whacker. Actually, that animated GIF doesn't show what's in the video. In the video, you're actually losing money. Because you're cutting down somebody's flowers that, you know, now you have to go back and pay for. So you're not going to upgrade that string trimmer
anywhere fast. So there's not the way you used to play Mario Kart, where you're like trying to knock people off the road the entire time?
Well, I suppose you could. I mean, you know, there are lots of ways of playing these games, and you could play SimCity in a way that would, you know, turn things off that way too.
Yeah, because I always find it fun. It reminds me of the game Dungeon Keeper.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
Which was so much fun because instead of being the guys trying to go in like in Diablo and, you know, root through the dungeon and find all the goodies and survive, you're building the dungeon to kill off all the people who come in and do the rooting through.
What I wonder, though, Michael, is that, you know... when you mow a yard, there's like all these obstacles that you got to cater for and got to be able to pivot around and work exactly right. So can you imagine like a yard that's full of sprinkler systems that pop up randomly and you go like, oh no, I don't want to mow over the sprinkler head and now have that be a $2,000 fix.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Fun all stuff. Right.
Fun stuff indeed. Well, that gets us to the end of this edition of Games at Work.biz, and you know, if you are interested in taking a chance to play a game, or you're enjoying a game, or doing something around work and games and gaming and work, how could people find us?
Well, you know, there's lots of ways to find us. In Hungary, you go to the Apple iTunes store and just download us and tell your friends about us and like us. So that's over on iTunes, but we're also available on the Blueberry Network. We're available on Amazon Music's podcast feeds. We have a page on Facebook or Twitter at games@work_biz, or you could always go to our website, games@work.biz.
Look at these options. So many places to come find us. Tell your friends, help us get bigger in Hungary. And until next time, in the best Hungarian voice I can give you, see ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz, or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.